Let's start with David Thomas, Deputy Director of Pensions and Savings of Her Majesty's Treasury, which actually is interesting that the two are now combined. And David, of course, is Deputy Director. If anything goes wrong, Deputy Heads will roll, I'm sure. And David will tell us perhaps something of the battles over pension tax relief, lifetime ISAs, pension ISAs, and all the other things that we expect to be talked about. David, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the warm welcome for being here. I just need to give a short overview of the changes, the main changes that have been made since 2010, and draw a few conclusions from those, a few observations from those. Excellent. And the first, actually, I want to start with not actually about the taxation of pensions or savings specifically. It's not about the taxation, but actually the more general structural change to the pension system, to the tax system, which is the introduction of personal allowance. I won't dwell on that, but of course there's been a nearly 70% increase, and the personal allowance is on its way to 12,500 by the end of the Parliament, according to the Conservative manifesto. Very, very significant change, which of course particularly affects people towards the end of their lives, and significantly reducing the amount of tax that they may pay. Turning more specifically then to changes to taxation of savings and taxation of savings in general, big changes in pretty much every area of savings and pensions. So run over those for general savings first. Back in 2010-11, actually the taxation regime for interest-bearing savings outside ISAs was relatively straightforward. It was mostly, even one or two quirks aside, the same as for general income. This year, a very significant change to that, the introduction of the personal savings allowance, means that basically taxpayers can now get up to £1,000 of interest tax-free, or £500 if you're a higher rate taxpayer, or nothing if you're an additional rate taxpayer. It's quite a significant change, because one main result of that is that we are no longer requiring banks to deduct interest at source. I don't know whether or not you have noticed that in your recent bank statements. And particularly a simplification for non-taxpayers who no longer need to reclaim the tax that they used to have to. The number, I gather, did not. I hope it also, though, helps with those grappling with financial services. It was always quite confusing to have to compare a tax-free and a taxed rate. We've now removed one of those choices for people, and I hope every little helps there. And also, I think, better reflects the current nature of the savings market, where ISAs, in fact, don't always have the best rate. So here we see the tax system stepping back a little bit and allowing people a greater freedom of choice, or influencing their choice less at this end. And the policy, which I should say probably owes a fair bit to the work of the IFS, and not least the Mernes report, which I think Paul was involved in, which suggested, as have a number of economists previously, that savings, particularly ordinary savings, are vastly overtaxed in real terms compared to other forms of income, and that ordinary savings should just face a straightforward system, saved out of taxed earnings, and then no more tax applied. And for the vast majority of people, 95% of taxpayers will now not be paying any savings tax at all, although those with large interest income will continue to pay tax. So a significant change there. Turning next to the equity side of savings and investment, affects fewer people. Most people, of course, have some interest in the savings interest-bearing world, but in equity does affect fewer people, and unlike the changes that were made to the personal savings allowance, the changes that have been made recently have actually raised some revenue. As was just been talked about, back in 2010-11, we had a rather complicated, following on from the changes talked about, a tax credit system which had become theoretical, really, rather than practical. I, for one, have continued to find it quite confusing, this national tax credit system. But it effectively gave the rates of no tax for a basic rate, taxpayers 25% higher rate, and so on. Capital gains regime, familiar regime, higher rates changed in that year. Capital gains, in fact, though, relatively minor interest to those who are saving for investment rather than owning companies that they are more actively interested in. Again, very significant change this year, just as with the personal savings allowance, we now have a personal dividend allowance. This now applies, as I'm sure you know, to everyone, not just to basic rate taxpayers. Outside that, it's now a higher rate. But again, this results in almost three quarters of those who receive dividends, not paying any tax at all, or if you take the taxpayer population as a whole, those who might at some point decide to invest in dividend income, then 95% of taxpayers will not be paying any tax on the dividends from this year. So again, a very significant rolling back for the number of taxpayers. And finally, the general savings, of course, the ISAs, they haven't changed quite so much, other than to make them more flexible. The rate, the amount that you can put in has very significantly increased, from $10,000 just over $15,000 to about $20,000 next year. Much more freedom to split between cash and investments. There's effectively a trebling of the amount that you can put in cash. A much wider choice of investments, alternative investment market aim, peer-to-peer lending, and so on. So leaving pensions to one side, what conclusions one might want to draw from that? Well, perhaps the most significant is that for the vast majority of taxpayers, 95% of taxpayers, most of these tax issues now around pensions, around the general savings, are not really very current. They're not going to be paying tax on their savings or on their investment income. In the trade, you might say we've essentially moved from a TTE system, i.e. a system where we took tax twice, to a TDE system where we took tax once, just at the beginning. It's also been a tax simplification for most. I've already mentioned people don't have to claim back tax anymore. Some people with larger incomes in these areas will have to pay, will have new tax to pay, but for the majority of people, it's vastly outweighed by the numbers, you don't have to have tax deducted anymore. And also the tax system is interfering much less with their choices. More freedom in the ISAs, they can take advantage of these higher interest current accounts, but still some constraints around the system for those with large incomes. For alternative pensions, though, there is a new category, perhaps, of incentives that have been brought in the last 6 years, and we have three new incentives to say which go beyond the basic, not just not collecting tax, but actually going down in the banks, all with fairly similar concept behind them. Helped by ISA, I'm not going to go through these in lots of detail, but helped by ISA, the first of these, encouraging people to save towards their first home, to which they can get 25% bonus up to £3,000 from the government. That will run until November 2019, and then you won't be able to open a new account. And instead, there will be two other programmes in place. One is Help to Save, trying to tackle the under-saving problem and creating more of a savings habit amongst those further down the income distribution, where savings have often historically been much lower and much more difficult to get people to save. That will be available from 2018 to about 3.5 million people, and they'll be able to say they get a 50% bonus and for the sake of 2 years, and then again for a further 2 years to really embed the habit there, so a maximum of £1,200 that you get there. And then most recently, and I'm sure there'll be more questions about this later, the Lifetime ISA, which will be introduced in April next year, you'll be able to save up to £4,000 each year, which is 25% bonus from the government. Anyone aged 18 to 40 can open one, treat up to age 50, and then you can take the money out. Not just for a first home, as we've helped to buy, sir, but also to encourage much longer-term saving up to age 50. And small changes on that. Finally, turning briefly to pensions. Again, this is perhaps an area, I think there hasn't been a finance bill for at least 10 years where we haven't made some changes to the pension system. So a lot of change in this area. And some, as you can see here, changes not only to how you build up a pension accumulation, but also how you take it down again, decumulation, and take the money out. On the accumulation side, a lot of changes to how much you can actually save in the first place. The £255,000 that you could save in the pension each year back in 2010, that's falling to £40,000, or for some, take it down to £10,000. It's obviously a very significant reduction, but it's still very far above the mean pension savings of around £6,000 a year. The lifetime allowance also falling significantly from £1.8 million to £1 million, although it will go up again with inflation from 2018. A very significant fall, although it again affects rather few people. I mean, pension savings between 55 and 64 are only around £85,000, which of course does not have a very large pension. But even if you took a 65-year-old retiring now and wanted to buy £20,000 annuity indexed at 3%, which if you take it longer than you say pension would give them something in the region of about £28,000, so broadly equivalent to full-time earnings of a working person. To do that, they need a pension pot of around £600,000. So again, comfortably within that lifetime limit. Pension system is still a large cost in taxable gold, and last summer, as I'm sure you will know, if you follow this area, the government conducted an extensive consultation on whether it should be changed or not changed. Many different arguments were put in that, and again, they might come up, I suppose, in later questions, and I think my panellists may be saying a bit more about this. All I will say is that you can make a case for the current system, as the IFS, with some changes, have done, or as others have done, suggest that you might look through a different lens, and perhaps there's a case for changing it. At the budget, the government concluded that there was not really sufficient consensus on reform, and instead we should help people to get better information through a pensions dashboard, and to enable them to see that the pensions are in place, and to have an extra option through the lifetime ISA. And then finally, decumulation, very briefly, very significant change, no longer needing to buy an annuity, freedom to draw down, and indeed bringing in from next year the ability to sell an annuity. So again, very significant, as we saw on the general side, significant increase in the choices that are available to people, both within the pension system and beyond with the lifetime ISA, and still a strong incentive to save in a tax-free or a tax-advantaged way, but constrained again at the upper end. I think it's sometimes said that there doesn't seem to be a picture, but I hope I've managed to draw out a couple of threads there. I shall pause there and hand over to my colleagues.
Thank you very much, David.